ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Which is attractive in the beginning and detestable at the end. With women, the living entity is entangled with lusty desires and he enjoys sex, just as one enjoys the aroma of a flower. He thus enjoys a life of sense gratification from his tongue to his genitals. And in this way, the living entity considers himself very happy in family life. United with his wife, he always remains absorbed in such thoughts. He feels great pleasure in hearing the talks of his wife and children, which are like the sweet humming of bumblebees that collect honey from flower to flower. He forgets that before his time, which is taken, taking away his lifespan with the passing of day and night. He does not see the gradual diminishing of his life, nor does he care about the superintendent of death who is trying to kill him from behind. Just try to understand this. You are in a precarious position and are threatened from all sides. The poet by his divine grace, V.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Materialistic life means forgetting one's constitutional position as the eternal servant of Krishna. And this forgetfulness is especially enhanced in the Grihastha Ashram. In the Grihastha Ashram, a young man accepts a young wife who is very beautiful in the beginning, but in due course of time, after giving birth to many children and becoming older and older, she demands many things from the husband to maintain the entire family. At such a time, the wife becomes detestable to the very man who accepted her in her younger days. One becomes attached to the Grihastha Ashram for two reasons only. The wife cooks palatable dishes for the satisfaction of her husband's tongue, and she gives him sexual pleasure at night. A person attached to the Grihastha Ashram is always thinking of these two things, palatable food and sex enjoyment. The talks of the wife, which are enjoyed as a family recreation, and the talks of the children, both attract the living entity. He thus forgets that he has to die someday and has to prepare for the next life if he wants to be put into a congenial body. The deer in the flower garden is an allegory used by the great sage Narada to point out to the king that the king himself is simply entrapped by such surroundings. Actually, everyone is surrounded by such a family life which misleads one. The living entity thus forgets that he has to return home back to Godhead. He simply becomes entangled in family life. Prahlad Maharaj has therefore hinted, Itpatna tam griham anna kutam vana katoya anandarim asvita. Family life is considered a blind well under kupam into which a person falls and dies without help. Prahlad Maharaj recommends that while one's senses are there and one's strong enough, he should abandon the grihastha ashram and take shelter of those through the Lord, going to the forest of Vrindavan. According to Vedic civilization, one has to give up family life at a certain stage, the age of 50, take vanaprastha, and eventually remain alone as a sannyasi. That is the prescribed method of Vedic civilization known as vanaprastha. When one takes sannyas after enjoying family life, he pleases the Supreme Lord Vishnu. One has to understand one's position in family or worldly life. That is called intelligence. One should not remain always trapped in family life to satisfy his tongue and genitals in association with the wife. In such a way, one simply spoils his life. According to Vedic civilization, it is imperative to give up the family at a certain stage by force if necessary. Unfortunately, so-called followers of Vedic life do not give up their family even at the end of life unless they are forced by death. There should be a thorough overhauling of the social system, and society should revert to the Vedic principles, that is the four varnas and the four ashramas. So this here we see that the Vanashram institution is to regulate the tendency to enjoy the senses, beginning from the tongue down to the genitals. If that is not regulated, of course, that uncontrolled sense gratification, which is very protracted in the beginning, giving no pleasure in the end, in fact, in the end, the same circumstances can be very, very disturbing. Once you give up that position, a very temporary and limited source of happiness, and instead one should seek out eternal happiness, getting out of the cycle of birth and death and going back to Godhead. So that is Vanashram. A daily Vanashram is meant to help us to, you know, go back to the spiritual world. So here we see that in this purport, of course, you know, it describes that the women, the wife, giving trouble to the husband. But I'm sure I've heard somewhere that sometimes the husbands give trouble to the wife. Would that be right? Most likely. Especially in Kali Yuga. In around the world, domestic violence, where, you know, 70, 80, 90% of the trouble is given by the man to the wife. That's the actual fact of the matter. The more association a woman has with a man, the more likely there is to be domestic violence by the man. So therefore, because we're in lockdown, because of the coronavirus system, domestic violence, alcoholism, for the men, they're working during the day, and they're not spending all the time, all day with the wife and the children, they actually feel some sense of relief of some pressure. Sometimes too much time in the home is like a pressure cooker. And now, you know, because of the crisis around the world, you know, many men are having to spend more time with their wife and children, and it's very difficult for them. And they're becoming frustrated, and they're not finding happiness, so they're taking intoxication, and in an intoxicated state, the purpose of having just sex life and so many different things, and all this sense of being somehow satisfied by the other members of the family, it's just not a very good proposition. And so there's a lot of frustration, and a lot of anger, a lot of disturbance. You know, women and children should not be looked upon as objects of exploitation. And of course, if they are, that's going to cause problems, both for the women and children and for the men. So, and for society, of course. So, you know, it goes both ways, but here, because, you know, Narada Muni is speaking to a man, he's presenting his situation, seeing your position in family life with wife and children is something pleasing, but it's not. And of course, you know, especially in Kali Yuga, if you were talking to any woman, you would present the same thing, except that you would present your thinking, living in family life is very nice in the beginning, and then it just turns very sour at the end. You know, that same man you loved in the beginning. So, therefore, ultimately, the Varnashram system teaches that one should not seek out such a illusory type of happiness, which is more like a drop of water in the desert, which really just agitates the mind, doesn't really satisfy. So one should give up that process, not search that out, life after life, even the animal species. So here, it's recommending, Prabhupada is saying there should be a thorough overhauling of the social system. So throughout the world, we should not live like that. Throughout the world, actually, this is the common situation that people live in, right to the point of death, even if circumstances are very, very disturbing. Right to the point of death, because there may be some little hope of sense gratification, people will stay in family life like that. It's the law of diminishing returns. So it's like with people take cigarettes, alcohol, drugs. So in the beginning, a little bit of sense gratification, intoxication, and they get a big, buzz. As time goes on, they have to spend more money, take more intoxication, which has a greater effect on the body, the mind, gradually destroying the body and the mind, destroying one's relationships with everyone, destroying one's finances. So one is putting more and more sacrifice, experiencing more and more problem, and the same drugs are giving less, so they have to take more and more of the drugs. So it's the law of diminishing returns, like that. And material happiness is, always follows that law. So even in family life, it follows that same law. So, the Vedas are not necessarily having a poke at family life. It's pointing out that this is the nature of material enjoyment. Therefore, our social system, which is based upon this trying to enjoy material life and diminishing returns, that system should be overhauled, and it should be overhauled by reverting to the Vedic principle. So Srila Prabhupada is, saying Vedic principles is that there are four ashrams and four varnas. Four varnas, or social divisions, means that if one's material conditioning, material nature, which covers the pure nature of the soul, if that if it is predominantly in sattva or goodness, where there is knowledge, such persons in the social division generally guide society. They act as teachers, ministers, persons of knowledge, counselors, in many different ways they guide in society. Those who are predominantly in rajas, or the more passionate by nature, they have less knowledge, less understanding, and a little bit more tendency to act, even though they have a little bit less knowledge, they have more tendency to act. They want to, manipulate material nature and material world for particular purposes. Of course, this is very good if they want to take up administration, because if they're guided by those with full knowledge, then they are in a good position to administrate and to get things done and organize society. And then you have the vices, they're a mixture of rajas, passion, and tamas. So a little less knowledge, a little bit more ignorance, just you can say it that way. They're still very active, but they come under the administrators and the brahmanas who are guiding the administrators, and they produce the needs of society. And then you have those who are, not much knowledge, but they do have the tendency to follow the higher three sections, and they like the legs of society, they work very hard to under the others, and they're like the labour force like that. And such persons don't particularly have a desire to be rulers or teachers. They're quite happy actually with some of the simple necessities of life, and live with their family and enjoy family life. But under the Vedic principles, where the goal is, even for such persons, under the guidance of those with knowledge, they're still being cultivated in spiritual consciousness, whereby all of those sections of society are eligible to go back to Godhead if they actually follow the leaders. So then you have the spiritual orders. You have the brahmacharis in the beginning, there are the celibate students, and then the celibate students, they will naturally take most of them, 90% more, they will become married, but they will live in married life in a regulated way, knowing that eventually, when the children have grown up, they will give up all sorts of all sex life. They may live together, they may then perform different spiritual practices to prepare for going back to Godhead. That is the main thing, more so than family life. And then that can lead to sannyas, in which case the men 100% are on the position of complete renunciation, and there is no connection whatsoever. They are literally, it's almost like civil dead in one sense. There's no connection with women at all, very, very strict. So, now, we know that in Kali Yuga, so Prabhupada is saying here that society should revert to Vedic principles. But we also know that Srila Prabhupada our scriptures describe that in Kali Yuga, apart from the most simplest process of spiritual life, Harinam, chanting the holy names of the Lord, everything else is pretty much not possible to be implemented on a full scale. Perhaps to some small degree, but to the full scale, and obey the principles cannot be implemented. But as we can see here, Prabhupada, throughout his books, he is suggesting it should be implemented. So this is an interesting topic, you know, for our class. And because today is the disappearance day of Jayananda, I want to discuss that by how it actually manifests in the life of the devotee, following the Dharma Sram, under the guidance of the spiritual master, through the processes of Brahmachari, Grihastha, and Prasannyas, and how, through the practice of devotional service, that what may take many, many lifetimes, hundreds, thousands and thousands of lifetimes, gradually, through the Dharma Sram, gradually coming to the point of complete detachment, in one lifetime, under the guidance of the spiritual master, by practicing devotional service, especially, predominantly chanting the holy names of the Lord, one can actually perfect all the ashrams in one lifetime and go back to Godhead in one lifetime. So I'm going to discuss that point. So, and it gives a good idea of how we implement Dharma Sram within our society and how by and large, depending on a person, how much they take up the devotional or the spiritual aspect of Dharma Sram, many people may depend more on some of the general principles of Dharma Sram, which can be implemented and should be implemented in Kali Yuga. And to the degree that they take up the spiritual process of bhakti, to that degree they can transcend the modes of material nature and therefore the Dharma Sram, or in other words, they can perfect, attain the qualifications of one who has perfected all the ashrams. It's considered in the Bhagavad Gita, when Srimad Bhagavatam says that even if one is not a member of the Dharma Sram, if one is a chandala or malecha, so they're considered, very low class. If such a person is chanting the holy names of the Lord, it's considered either in past life they have performed all the activities of the scriptures, including the Dharma Sram processes, or if they have not, by the chanting the holy name, they get that result anyway, and they are so purified that they can even purify others. Whereas, even if one is born in a Brahmin family, if they can't chant the holy name of the Lord, or if they don't chant the holy name of the Lord, they cannot even purify themselves, even though they're expertly following the principles of Dharma Sram. That is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. It's in the Prabhupada's sites in the 6th chapter, I think it is. 5th or 6th chapter. So, let's have a look here then. Some letters by Srila Prabhupada to Jayananda, and how we see some of these points highlighted, and Jayananda, by Srila Prabhupada's standards, is a person that everyone in Islam should follow. First of all, I'll read this letter. This is a letter to Ramaswara, May 11th May 1977, by Srila Prabhupada. And this is after Jayananda, his disappearance. My dear Ramaswara, Jayananda's death is glorious. It is very good that he had stated, what is the use of such a useless body? You better give it up. He has left his body very wonderfully, and he has been transferred to Vaikuntha. I have already sent a condolence letter for publication back to Godhead. Everyone should follow the example of Jayananda. I am very proud that I had such a nice disciple. If possible, Jayananda's picture should be hung in the rough of Lord Jagannath, and in all our temples a day may be set aside for holding a festival in his honour, just as we do on the disappearance day of other great Vaishnavas. So this hearing, we're going to hear the words of Jayananda.
I was just going to ask if I can see a picture of it.
Jayananda, one time, Prabhupada, Jayananda walked in, Prabhupada said, well, you look like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he said, yes, you know, very fair complexion, tall, very handsome. So that's it. That's a mental image for you. So, to please Srila Prabhupada and to, you know, these activities on the Vaishnava calendar, very significant. If they're on their Vaishnava calendar, they're very significant.
How did he pass, John?
He had, was it leukemia? Yeah.
It must have been
died of cancer. And he had, in the beginning, Prabhupada describes, he was the first person, he donated $5,000 to Prabhupada for Prabhupada to publish his Bhagavad Gita, first. And then in the end, he got another $5,000, which he got for his treatment, and he gave that to Prabhupada. And you see here that here in just before he passed away, Prabhupada writes to Jayananda, please get my blessings. I beg to acknowledge receiving your letter dated February 21st, 1977. And I thank you for the check as well as the nice sentiments you have expressed. In the beginning, you also gave me $5,000, and now again you have sent. This body is today or tomorrow finished. We should not be very much bothered about the body. Trees also live for thousands of years, but that does not mean a successful life. A successful life is one of Krishna consciousness. By the grace of Krishna, from the very beginning you are a devotee, and that is the real profit of your life. I thank you for your check, but I would prefer that you may require the money for your treatment. So if you like, I can return it. But I hear that you have some income. I pray to Krishna for your more advanced Krishna consciousness life. About a sailor, it is said, Jivada Malava, a sailor may live or die, it doesn't matter. While living, he is engaged in Krishna consciousness business, and when dying, he goes back home, back to Godhead, hoping this finds you, improving your health, your ever well, so basically, but to the point. So twice, you know, he gave that money. And you can see the Buddha Prabhupada. Prabhupada was very grateful, but he was also, you know, quite happy to give the money back that you used. But Jayananda wanted him to have that. So, just a very loving relationship, trusting relationship. And so on this day, we're going to please Srila Prabhupada. We're going to understand Prabhupada's statement about the implementing Vanashram and how that relates to us perfectly following Prabhupada's instruction as devotees through the life of Jayananda. And I'm going to do that by reading some of the letters of Prabhupada to Jayananda. So, I'm going to read this letter here first. This is I'll read this one first. So, this is a letter to Jayananda. Prabhupada, my dear Jayananda Das, please accept my blessings. I am in due receipt of your letter dated August 11th, 1975, and have noted the contents. What you have done is good. Why should you remarry? Rather, you should take something else. Now you are getting very good training. Why has Jayatirtha suggested you to remarry? In Delhi, there is a certain kind of laddu which has such a taste that anyone who has tasted it once, he laments, "Oh, how I'd like to taste it again." And anyone who has never tasted, he also laments, "Oh, I've never tasted it." So one who has tasted, one who has not tasted, both are lamenting. Wife is like that. In other words, marriage or sex life is like that. You have already tasted, now you are lamenting. But my advice to you is not to try to taste again. Otherwise, your lamentation will increase. You've got no children, so you are free to take something else. Sex life is nasty. But out of illusion, you think it is nice. Now you are experienced, so don't take sex life again. You should not take sannyas out of sentiment nor artificially, but it is better to accept it anyway. I hope this meets you in good health and everywhere also AC Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So that I read that one first because it has it describes the same tone of this purport, this translation, that you know, this the nature of family life for men and women based around, you know, eating and sex and different senses. As Prabhupada said, it's a nasty business ultimately, you know, in the long run. And whether you think about it, that I have not experienced family life, you'll lament. And if you enter into family life, you'll lament. Now, I want to go to a previous letter. Now, this one here is in Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I beg to thank you for your letter, undated. I congratulate you on your being elected as president of ISKCON San Francisco branch. Your election as president is a recognition by Krishna, and therefore I've got full support for you. So Prabhupada is fully supporting Canada because of how Prabhupada we see in many different ways, not just because he's temporal present, but in many different ways, is because he's very dear to his God brothers and God sisters. And as we see here, he loves to chant Hare Krishna, which Prabhupada, when he's driving, he could tell. But in many different ways, Prabhupada saw that his enthusiasm, his faith in both Prabhupada, the deity, Krishna, the chanting, preaching, showed that he was recognized by Krishna. And therefore, Prabhupada gave his full support. Mukunda and other members have rightly selected you as president. Your service attitude for Krishna and your sincere attempts at being advanced in Krishna consciousness will work with you and make your life more and more glorious and a happy state. I have been very glad that you are appreciating by yourself the effects of sincere Krishna consciousness. I have nothing new to instruct you. The same old instruction, namely constant chanting and attentively hearing the transcendental vibration of Hare Krishna, is the only process for self-realization in this age. Right, so here we see Prabhupada mentioning the same point, that there is no other way to become self-realized and, you know, elevate. I mean, if one doesn't understand that one is a spirit soul and identifies with oneself with the body, one is practically on the platform of an animal, because that is their platform. And so the only process mentioned in the scriptures in this age of Kali is the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. And the acharyas also recommend various principles from the Varnashram, which if one is chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra nicely, then it is possible that you can perform them correctly, even though it's the minimum to this age. And by that process, there is a support mechanism, a safety net and a support platform for one who is chanting the holy name of the Lord while one is in the process of taking full shelter of the holy name. Just like taking Brahman, you know, in this gong, you know, we follow the Varnashram. You know, everyone gets married, that means they follow the Varnashram. If they take Brahman and Vishesha, Varnashram. If they take somebody else, they Varnashram. So many different things. Even the right hand, they Varnashram. So many Baal Stadium, Varnashram. So many things we follow. And they support one. You know, we see that by taking training as a Brahmana or Brahmi in cleanliness and knowledge of the scriptures, regulating the mind and the senses, it increases our ability to chant Hare Krishna properly. As Prabhupada says, chanting Hare Krishna, the main thing is to chant sincerely and hear it very attentively. Now, if the mind is disturbed, so if people, you know, should be married and that settles the mind so that they can chant very sincerely and hear attentively, that is good. If someone is not married and their mind is really disturbed because they actually need to be married, they'll be chanting and then there's so much disturbance in the mind and senses. All day. So it's very supportive. So these activities of taking, you know, Brahman training, marriage, so many different things, they allow the person to get a little control of the mind and senses, but the purpose of that is that they will chant Hare Krishna very sincerely and heal with full attention. And that allows the spiritual process. So then, in San Francisco, while you were driving your car, and I was seeing by hearing your transcendental vibration, this very sincere attempt has enriched your consciousness, and my only instruction is that you may constantly do this habit without fail. Regarding your dispute in your mind as to remaining a brahmachari, grihastha, or becoming sannyas, there is nothing to be bothered with. Anyone who is in full Krishna consciousness and is dedicating his life for Krishna is already a sannyas even if he is a married man. If you like, you can become a householder, and I have no objection to that. Our Vaishnava philosophy instructs to become Vibhati Sannyasis. This means a man who knows things as they are. Therefore, a devotee who knows that everything belongs to Krishna and that he is the proprietor of all such such a devotee is certainly Vibhati Sannyasi. Our philosophy is that we should accept things as prasadam of Krishna and nothing for sense enjoyment. Anyone who accepts things for sense enjoyment, even if he is externally a saffron-dressed man, is not a sannyasi. The Mayavadi sannyasi considers himself as God. This concept of life develops under illusion. When a person fails to become the lord of the universe, it is like the sly fox who attempts to taste grapes and failing to do so says the grapes are sour. The Mayavadi sannyasins are frustrated beings in their attempt to enjoy the world. Therefore they say the world is fake or the grapes are sour. The world is not false. Krishna is the supreme truth and the world is his energy. Therefore, the energy of the supreme truth cannot be false. But we must know that this energy is inferior to his spiritual energy. As there are hairs and nails in the body, and sometimes we separate these parts from the body, similarly, when the material energy is separated from the service of the Lord, it is inferior. Inferior energy is not false but temporary. The same temporary energy, when surcharged with Krishna consciousness, it transforms into supreme energy by the supreme will. By this will, any energy can be transformed into another just like electronic energy in a refrigerator or in a heater. To an ordinary layman, he sees cold and hot, but to an electrician, he sees electricity. So when one is engaged in the service of the Lord, that person is already in the spiritual energy, and a sannyasi, and the real purpose of the sannyasi is to transform himself from the inferior to the superior spiritual energy. If your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, you're always a sannyas, sannyasi, you're ever well wishing that is Bhakti Vedanta. So, in Krishna consciousness, Krishna describes in the Bhagavad Gita that sex life, according to religious principles, Krishna says, I am that sex life. Sixth chapter and in various places, Krishna declares that Arjuna, you are the true sannyasi because you dedicated everything to the supreme, so therefore all your activities are not material but they're spiritual and they only have a spiritual effect, and your consciousness is spiritual as well, so you are the true sannyasi because you've sacrificed everything for the supreme. Sat-nyasi. Sat the Supreme Absolute Truth, Nyasi, to sacrifice everything for the Supreme. That's the, so sannyasi comes from that actual Sanskrit, to sacrifice everything for the Supreme. Sat, yeah, so sannyasi, sat, nyasi. So, so here, Srila Prabhupada in one sense says, don't bother, you know, you're deciding, you know, Brahmachari Grihas has a sannyasa. Saying don't bother in the sense that, you know, it doesn't make a lot of difference. If you want to get married, and through being married, you're changing very nicely, forming your service in your Krishna consciousness, there's no difference between that person and the sannyasi. That is the Vaishnava understanding. Now, apart from the process of bhakti, other forms of those trying to attain self-realization or attain knowledge of the absolute truth, they don't understand that and they can't follow that. So, for instance, in the Mayavadi school, Sankaracharya, you take sannyas, then you can begin to practice. It begins from sannyas. You know, to follow the principles of impersonalism, you begin the process when you can take sannyas. Otherwise, you cannot. Now, so here, you know, the Mayavadis or the impersonalists, they can't understand any aspect of Krishna consciousness. They can't understand the Guru, they can't understand Krishna, and they can't understand the devotee, and they can't understand devotional service. For the impersonalists, for those not on the path of devotion, for everyone else trying to understand spiritual life or attain spiritual progress, and they're not on the path of devotional service, they cannot understand any of these things, and they have a complete misconception of everything. We follow such persons as Jayananda, his father, Srila Prabhupada. He received that, the Jayananda, in one lifetime, went from someone who was not following anything to someone who, you know, went through the different varnas to the renounced order, and then went back to Godhead. In one lifetime. So we see there the power of chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, and we also see that, in one sense, the aspects of Varnashram can be supported in the beginning. But when one is, you know, fully Krishna conscious, whatever one's Varna or Ashram that one is practicing is very external and is no indication of a person's actual spiritual advancement. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was travelling through South India and he came across Ramananda Roy, I think he sent Sadhguru Bhattacharya to also speak with Ramananda Roy. Ramananda Roy was considered to be, although he was a grihastha and not quite a sutra, but someone in the lower bounds materially, ordinarily sannyasis wouldn't have anything, they're almost untouchable, such persons, even though they're very aristocratic people in one sense. But here, the sannyasis was advised by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you take instruction from him, he is spiritually advanced. So, one's on this when one does chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra nicely, sincerely, and also hears the chanting, the hearing what they're chanting, then and one is performing activities which are very pleasing to the spiritual master, then one's ashram has no bearing on their transcendental situation, and it makes no difference whether one is sannyasa or grihastha or brahmacharya. Only on the bhakti platform can one transcend all of those external things. And as Krishna said to Arjuna, I want you to transcend, you know, all these different Vedic principles like that. You want to transcend. Although Krishna was asking him to transcend them, Krishna was also asking, but you're in Shakti, you fight. The same as, you know, here. You know, we hear. So one thing we should be very careful of, and sometimes this is a problem, is that a devotee may think, you know, the only way to chant Hare Krishna, I get that a lot because I do some skaras, some yogis, and devotees ask me, even Sindhi devotees, like, you know, why are you doing that? You know, the main thing is Hare Krishna, you know, it's like something which, you know, what are you doing? Is that necessary? And what they don't understand is that you know, we're asked to do both as it's appropriate. So Bhanasram principles, you know, once Prabhupada was asked, you know, in Kali Yuga we need to do samskaras, what was the minimum? The minimum means that every devotee is, you know, will generally get married. That's minimum. Only every devotee will get married. That's samskara. That's minimum. Minimum means our wedding ceremonies can be, you know, 15 minutes, half an hour. You know, in the old days it used to, I remember when I got married, it was the first time, it was, you know, the whole group of us. You know, it's a very quick ceremony. I think you exchange garments, you know, the bride walks around a few times, you know, you hear a lecture, you have a feast, and that's it. You know, there's not much to it. So, you know, minimum, don't make too much of a fuss. I like the 3-day, you know, fiascos that they have sometimes, and then 2 weeks, 2 days later they're divorced. You know. So, you know, giving first grains. Yeah, quite often first grade, you just literally bring the baby in, put a little mahabhashat in the mouth, ceremony down. Or you can do something more elaborate if people need to see that. Yeah. So it's the minimum, but you know, take initiation, take the month. No, so minimum, but we don't make too much of a fuss. When Prabhupada was, you know, establishing the temple in Vrindavan, he said we can just chant Hare Krishna. Others will criticize, and you know, so he did some, you know, very elaborate ceremony. So others don't criticize. So, but for the sake of leading people on the right path, and also for the fact that as devotees, we do require to perform activities such as get married, take Brahman, and follow certain principles. Because we're not always chanting sincerely 100% of the time and hearing. You know, quite often, you know, you can sit and hear a devotee chant, and you know because they're missing, you know, 3, sometimes 4 names in the mantra, and the names that they aren't chanting, you can barely recognize them, and you think they're not hearing that mantra. Because the mantra, they're not even saying the whole mantra, and there's so much missing from that mantra, and they chant it, you can watch them chant 16 rounds, and you think they didn't even notice. How can they be hearing something and you don't notice that you're not chanting the mantra? So, what's going on is there's other things in the mind. They're not hearing. If there's other things in the mind, then the Vedic processes help us to settle the mind, you know, through various things that we do, help us to come to a sattvic platform and then chant. So before you chant the Gayatri Mantra, you must come to a sattvic platform. You must bathe, sit nicely dressed, you know, certain times of the day, mind fixed, you know, you must chant the Gayatri at that. And that practice helps you to chant Hare Krishna properly as well. So, now, this principle is very important. It is, you know, we often hear it, that the material world is not false. What is false is, you know, that it is a place for our enjoyment. And what is false is that I am a product of the material energy. I am, you know, this body. I am a Brahmana. I am a sannyasi. I am a woman. I am an Indian. That is false. That being illusion into a body, a sense of identification of seeing others, and the illusion that I am the enjoyer of this material, that's false. But the material energy is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says this divine energy of mine. He calls it divine energy because it's his eternal energy, it's the eternal energy of God. And for Krishna, it's not material because the material energy has a material quality when it's not used in the service of Krishna. That means that someone cannot see Krishna, how that energy is meant for Krishna's happiness. Do you think Krishna ever looks at the material energy like that? Forgetting himself? Forgetting that's my energy? So for him, it never has a material quality. It's his energy for his purposes. So, but this is the crux of it. Although it's a simple point, it underlies everything. And if we don't understand it, you know, we can't accept the guru. And if we can't accept the guru, we can't follow the guru. And if we can't follow the guru, we can't follow Krishna. And if we can't follow Krishna, you cannot actually... if one is not taking shelter of Krishna, and even if one is following all the principles of the Vanasram, it is a useless waste of time. If one performs activities by which they're not developing their love for God, it is a waste of time. So, for instance, on the question of guru, now, we're hearing the pastimes of Jayananda, which Prabhupada wanted us to do on this day. So Prabhupada was very happy. Now, the impersonalists, well, they would think, well, where is Prabhupada? Their concept is that guru is this. Guru, actually one Indian said this to Prabhupada directly to his face and he told me what. Your atma is guru, your body is not. Now what that means is what that allows him to do, what Prabhupada gradually, you know, because he understood. That allowed this person that because atma is one, and the atma that's within Prabhupada is the same as the atma within us and the same as the atma in any other bodhi spirit I want to follow. So I can just take a little bit from Prabhupada, make it look like I'm, you know, one of his followers and become popular. Oh yes, I'm a great associate of Prabhupada. I'm also a great associate of Ramakrishna. I'm also a great associate of this one, that one. And not follow anything. So Prabhupada got very animated to describe that that is nonsense. The guru, you can't, he says, and he said, you have just stated the guru is the direct manifestation, non-difference from the Supreme Lord Krishna. Yeah, yes, that is right. Then if he's directly non-different from Krishna, and there is no difference between Krishna's inside and outside, then why do you say Guru is his inside and outside is different? You say that he is non-different from Krishna. Krishna's inside and outside is non-different because he's absolute. The outside is absolute truth, the inside is absolute truth. How do you say that about Guru if he's not different from Krishna? He's considered the direct manifestation. They have the same spiritual quality. So Prabhupada explained that because the body of the Guru is used fully in the service of Krishna, it acts as the spiritual energy, non-different from the spiritual energy of the soul, the spiritual energy of Krishna. Chinmaya, Ananda Chinmaya Rasa. And therefore, he gave the example that just as if you put an iron rod into fire, then when you touch something with that iron rod, it acts like fire, not like an iron rod. And therefore, by understanding that the Guru and his activities, which he follows and his disciples follow, their spiritual activities, then one can accept Guru and then one can follow. Prabhupada also explains that to substantiate this, that so in other words, sometimes what the impersonalists say is, I respect you as Guru, the Atma is Guru, but I consider your activities of devotional service to be something material because they're getting married, they're earning money, they're doing this, and that. So they consider those activities as material. I expect your Guru, but what you're doing with your body, what the disciples are doing, that's material. Their activities are material. So therefore they cannot follow. The Prabhupada substantiated that, as we said, one who looks at a devotee, in the scriptures it says, that one is no better than an ass or a cow. If they look at a devotee, a woman, oh, that is a woman devotee, that is a man devotee, that is an Indian devotee, that is American devotee, and distinguishes between them as higher and lower, better, like that. That person is not better than an animal. He cannot make those distinctions. Oh, there is a sannyasa devotee, there is a grihasa devotee, like that. If one distinguishes on the bodily platform or on an external platform, it is offensive. And he gives this the example that Krishna, when he appeared in this world, he first appeared to Devaki and Vasudeva with four hands in his Narayana form. Like a little child in Narayana form. Fully decorated as a person under the Godhead. Jewelry. So that was obviously not manufactured in Devaki's womb. Full wardrobe.
Good money.
Then he transformed into the little baby Krishna. And that baby Krishna is as much God as the Narayana form of Krishna. And Krishna can accept any form and he's still God. Therefore, even if he accepts the form of the deity, such as Jagannath's made of wood. But it's not that, there's some wood there and Krishna's in there. That deity, what we see as wood, is Krishna. That is another form of Krishna. And if Prabhupada says in his lectures, If he assumes the form of wood or stone, the worshipful deity, it is just another form of Krishna and is not different from Krishna absolutely. He can accept anything because everything is Krishna. That is his energy. He can act fully through his energy. And the spiritual master and the Vaishnava, if they actually if they detach from the material aspect of the material energy, it regains its spiritual nature. So in this way, we follow the principles of Vanashram, but we don't identify ourselves externally. We're following the principles of Vanashram, getting married, taking Brahman, doing so many things. There's women, there's men, so many things, like little segregation like that, but still we're all working together cooperatively. But we don't identify ourselves as men, women, Brahmins, like that. We only identify ourselves on the eternal servant of Krishna, and in that way we're transcendental. And now, Jayananda, he was so self-realized and God-realized that he understood that this Lord Jagannath is non-different from Krishna, and that by performing those activities of, basically got up and running the first Rath Yatra, literally built the chariot from the ground up, and they, made the deities of the Jagannath and what have you. And then for many years, each year he was actually, I think for 3 or 4 years they built new carts. I mean, gradually they were so good carts that they just looked after those ones. But that was so pleasing to Srila Prabhupada. And so Prabhupada, he mentions here that, there's one letter he describes about that. In 1976, my dear Jayanandas, please accept my blessings. For so long I wanted to have Rath Yatra in New York, and now at long last you have helped me fulfill this long cherished dream. I mean, since he was a little kid, actually. The Rath carts were very strong and attractive, and I thank you and all of your assistants for working so hard to prepare such nice carts. May Krishna bless you all for your sincere service, that you may all go on making more and more advancement in Krishna consciousness. And I'll read in that line also, 1967, I'll read this last letter, and then a couple of questions. So 1967, the Prabhupada's first letter to Jayananda. And so I'll read them all. My dear Jayananda, please accept my blessings. I'm so glad to receive your letter of August 30, and I know also that you are a sincere devotee of Lord Krishna. When you drive your car, you always chant Hare Krishna. And when I was by your side, I could understand how heartily you have accepted the philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Now, I've heard that when Jayananda used to chant, I think it was maybe Makunda, he used to rock back and forth, chanting very, hey! Really enthusiastically, very clear, very nice chanting. Krishna is very kind to all, but he is especially kind to his sincere devotees. Just while I remember it, there's one more past when I talk about having a spiritual body. I heard Mukunda tell this story personally, that when Jayananda was in hospital, very, very ill, they went in and they asked him, is there anything you'd like? And he said, I'd like some quarters. So they cooked up this tub. You know how you have those plastic tubs, you'd almost put a little baby in it, you know, sit it in a bucket. There's about the size of a mini cake, so then. So they cook, filled that up with the cores, took them in. And McCormick said he ate all of them.
Oh, my.
So, anyway, Krishna is with, always with us within our hearts, and is always ready to give us direction. But because everyone is independent, Krishna responds cooperatively. Anyone who voluntarily cooperates with Krishna's desire, Krishna responds to his call very eagerly. Krishna descends to teach his Bhagavad Gita, begging our cooperation, and anyone who cooperates with him becomes blessed. You are sincerely cooperating with Krishna, and therefore you, all boys and girls in San Francisco, working together harmoniously, you all sincerely cooperate with Krishna, therefore you, all boys and girls in San Francisco, working together harmoniously. The Prabhupada is saying, this is the symptom of the blessing of Krishna, that a devotee can work harmoniously with other devotees. And he says, harmony means Krishna consciousness. So we can take it that lack of harmony, someone's causing problems, the devotees, lack of Krishna consciousness. Without Krishna consciousness, there cannot be harmony in the world. I've received the report of successful performance of Janmashtami ceremony. I'm glad to learn that you are willing to come to India for further study. I received no letter from Dayananda or his wife Nandarani. I am anxious to receive the report of the Los Angeles Center. I do not know their address. Your acknowledgement, quotes, so Prabhupada is quoting Dayananda, Krishna has been very merciful to me, unquote, is remarkable. You are realizing the fruit of chanting. So far my health is concerned, I'm improving. By Krishna's grace, and it is due to your feeling of my absence and eagerly awaiting for my return. So Prabhupada attributes his good health, his improving health, to the fact that disciples, especially such as Jayananda, are feeling separation in love from him, and really wanting him to return. So that's giving Prabhupada great enthusiasm. In fact, one of the third Gayatri mantra to the guru that we chant is that he is enthusing us because we are enthusing him. Isn't it? So when the guru sees the disciples becoming advanced, so we're trying to enthuse, the guru by pleasing him. And when he sees that, he says, they're becoming advanced, as a sense of advancement. And the guru becomes really pleased. So it's reciprocal. And that Prabhupada said that literally helped him, his health improved, just because it lifted his spirit so blissfully. He says, please go on cooperating between your God brothers. I'm always with you. Never mind if I'm physically absent. And here we also see the spiritual nature of the spiritual master. When we look at the murti, as we look at the murti of Jagannath, we understand that Lord Jagannath, Radha Baba, Gaurinathai, they accept our worship through the deity. If we actually worship the murti, it is not different from Prabhupada. Prabhupada exactly accepts our worship. And because he is a representative of Krishna and empowered by Krishna, by the grace of Krishna, Prabhupada understands and can reciprocate with everything that we do. Please convey my blessings to all the boys and girls and tell them that I'm very, very eager to return. Your ever well wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta. So, the only one I didn't read, which is there's a letter in the BTG where Prabhupada offers his condolences movie. Why not? I'm not putting people to sleep, then let's do that. Yeah, we might as well just hear that last one. I did read it. That was the one I think he also. I don't know that I've written this. Let's read this one. So this is the 5th of May 1977, after he passed away. My dear Johnny Mother, please accept my blessings. I am feeling very intensely your separation. So you see that reciprocal. You know, we feel separation from the Vaishnava, from the Guru. The Vaishnavi, then it's reciprocal. In 1967, you joined me in San Francisco. You were driving my car and chanting Hare Krishna. You were the first man to give me some contribution, $5,000 for printing my Bhagavad Gita. After that, you have rendered me very favorable service to Krishna in different ways. I hope at the time of your death, you were remembering Krishna. And as such, you have been promoted to the Eternal Association of Krishna. If not, if you had any tinge of material desire, you have gone to the celestial kingdom to live with the demigods for many thousands of years and enjoy the most opulent life of material existence. From there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. But even if one fails to promote himself to the spiritual world, at that time he comes down again on the surface of this globe and takes birth in a big family like yogis or brahmanas or aristocratic family where there is again a chance to revive in Krishna consciousness. But as you were hearing Krishna Kirtan, I am sure that you were directly promoted to Krishna Loka. And he quotes, Jamma kama chame yam yam yoveti tapadaha chakvadi hampana janna naitamamiti sodina Bhagavad Gita 4.9. Krishna has done a great favour to you not to continue your diseased body and has given you a suitable place for your service. Thank you very much. You have a well washer. Thank you, Dr. Vedanta Swami. So, Ananta Guru Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. Yeah, any comments or questions? So, Dr. Meditator. Prashad Ki Jai.
Yeah.